Let's see. Where are we going to start? I think the best place to start would be Stephen. We've only introduced you as Stephen. Do you want to give your name to our listeners and because we never got a chance to discuss yesterday, about because well, we know you do a lot of videos and stuff, and you're not afraid to go out in public. So I just thought I'd give you this opportunity if you wanted to give your name to our listeners, or what would you prefer to be called?
Yeah, sure, Jimmy. Yes. Well, my name is Stephen Manning. It'll be too late to keep that hidden from the public now, I think. My name is Stephen Manning. I'm the administrator of the Integrity Ireland Association, which is a group of concerned citizens who have come together to try and tackle endemic corruption, cronyism, and criminal cover-ups in Irish institutions.
Yeah, that's a very, very valiant project to take on, because we've been covering quite a few stories here today already, like about corruption in the force and corruption. It seems to be a global epidemic, really.
Well, we found in our research there are a couple of factors that probably need to be highlighted. Obviously there is corruption all over the world, but we tend to think of corruption in terms of third world despotic regimes, the Idi Amin's and so on, of this world. But it's rather a shock to discover it in your own backyard, so to speak, and find that. In fact, it seems that corruption and the general sort of capitalist system, I say, without getting too technical here, they tend to go hand in hand, because all the virtues that we're taught as children, to look after our neighbors, to show care and concern, not to be greedy or selfish, well, all of these virtues don't have any role to play when it comes to the bottom line. And you'll find that what's happened over, especially over the last 2 or 3 decades, is that very large corporations have usurped, if you like, the sovereign authority of the various governments just by virtue of how influential and how wealthy they are. They are able to influence their own agenda onto national entities such as our governments without our knowledge, of course. We think we are electing representatives who are going to look after our interests in a sort of an insular fashion. They look after Ireland's interests, and they are Irish politicians. But in fact, it seems that what is happening is that most politicians, when they become elected, they immediately become subject, no matter how good their intentions were beforehand, they immediately become subject to this incredible pressure from global corporations to fit the commercial agenda. And that commercial agenda, I can assure you that people and the welfare of people is one of the last things on the ladder as far as they're concerned. So,
Indeed,
that.
indeed, because we're
Go
seeing
ahead.
at the minute, Stephen, this push to get this TTIP brought in as quickly as possible, as Enda Kenny was calling for there last week, I believe. And TTIP would appear to be the next way that they'll be using to put people down in countries and remove their ability to have a say in what happens to their resources, for example, or what companies can do, or what they can extract. This TTIP is only going to enable them to cause more problems, giving them the ability to sue countries basically because of potential losses which have never been made, but they're only figures in the sky basically.
Oh, is this the TTIP? I'm sorry, Jimmy. I'm not familiar with that.
Okay,
Group.
okay.
Is it the Monsanto group?
Well, Sean, you'd probably be able to give a
Yeah.
lot more perspective on TTIP,
Well, TTIP is not too publicly mentioned, as you can tell, sort of contract basically, which will enable corporations, bottom line, to sue governments if they have local laws that stop them operating, environmental laws and what have you. This is the basic synopsis of it, and probably slightly biased as well. And these contracts are basically they form many different areas, such as energy, tax, and various other things. But Yeah, so that's kind of what TTIP is. There's also that is the Trans-Atlantic Partnership between America and Europe. There's another one called the Trans-Pacific Partnership between America and Asia and the rest of the world, kind of thing. So and these are American-driven corporate contracts that they're trying to push through. And WikiLeaks has released contract in full for the January period, and they released that indeed in January. So that's on the WikiLeaks site, and it's full of interesting information about TTIP and how biased it will be and how it will overwrite our own national laws. So that's the kind of worries that occur around TTIP, the transatlantic partnership, and there's many worries all over Europe about it, but very little is being discussed on the corporate media.
Wow. Well, I find that interesting, Sean. Thanks for the explanation, but it ties in exactly with the theory I was positing there for, earlier, that the corporations have harvested, if you like, all the energies of the various governmental bodies around the world and are putting pressure on them to adhere to their agenda, you know. But Yeah. I was going to say with Ireland, of course. Now, it sounds like you guys are far more aware of the international level problems there. what was a big shock to me was to discover that nearly all of the institutions of the Irish state were, you know, to use the term corrupt. I mean, they're certainly not functioning the way they're supposed to. They're not functioning in accordance with the law and in accordance with human rights. And this, of course, is why we set up Integrity Ireland. But we focused in mainly on policing, law enforcement and the courts on the simple premise that if an individual is in difficulties in Ireland and they pursue their grievances through the various statutory authorities, they will eventually end up dealing with the guards, with lawyers and or with the courts. And if those three institutions can't be trusted, then we are in serious problems. You know, we have serious difficulties indeed.
Yeah, I would happen to agree, because one of the news stories that I had highlighted for today here in Ireland, basically, there was a recent High Court decision, historic legal ruling, and it having a chilling civil rights repercussions. Like it was based on a judgment by what's his name, a Supreme Court judge. I think his name is Halloran. Let's see if I can find out where his name is. Like, but the basic of the case is this: like the law as it stands, like, you know, if evidence is illegally compiled and put together, like, or got in a sort of like in a not so legal way, that they try to overturn the decision, that evidence could be brought into a courtroom and then used to hammer the alleged defendant. Like, but it seems like that this court ruling was overturned. Like, you know, but I can see how they're trying to make it really, really hard for people to find a way in the courtroom, like, and put on like proper defences. Like, you know, it seems like it's becoming really, really tough for anybody going into a courtroom. I mean, we don't have lawyers that will fight cases for us. Like, the only people having any real success are people like you at Integrity Ireland, who are actually going out and handling their own cases, like common law advocates. And there seems to be a general trend to common law advocacy, and this severe mistrust in the legal system, in lawyers, in judges, in the police service. It's rampant. It's everywhere. You know, I could even my mum has a mistrust for it all now, and that's so strange in my family.
Well, I would say, Jimmy, if I may, the irony here, I think I told you this when we spoke earlier, the irony here is that I had an innate trust in the forces of law and order. I always have had. And I realize now the main reason for that is because I never actually came up against them. I had no reason to doubt their integrity or what they were doing. But you mentioned this particular Supreme Court ruling recently. Well, it was Justice Alan Hardiman was one of the seven judges involved, and he was the only judge that came out on record and said that this was not a good decision. And he was overruled by, it was 4-3, he was overruled. And to summarise for the people who may be listening, what it basically means is that in a case which, if anybody is following Integrity Ireland, they'll be aware of the Joe Ducey case. Now, I'll just briefly outline this because, if nothing else, it's an interesting sort of story. But Joe had difficulties with the guards for about 15 years. And not unlike many, many people who have had complaints sent in to us, it seems that a vendetta of sorts gets conducted against individual members of the public for minor brushes with the law or for just getting on the wrong side of somebody who's connected. But in Joe's case, he started to bite back, so to speak, and he ended up putting up a video describing all the abuses that he believed he'd suffered at the hands of the guards. Within 3 days of putting up the video, his house was raided by, according to Joe, up to 20 armed detectives from Harcourt Street in Dublin. Now, there were five vehicles involved. Three of them came all the way from Dublin to North Mayo. I mean, it's crazy. And Lord knows how much even this exercise cost, you know, when we hear that the guards haven't got enough resources. But 20 armed guards stormed a small Mayo farmhouse, basically took Joe out from his bedroom in his stocking feet and handcuffs, didn't show a warrant, and intimidated his wife and his father, who's in his late 70s, and a very gentle man, I must say. You know, I've met him personally a few times now. But anyway, the long and the short of it is that the guards took away all his computers, laptops, phones and everything, ostensibly on the allegation that someone, they said it was Joe, had sent an email, an abusive or threatening email to the Garda commissioner. Now, Joe has sworn under oath that he did not send that email. And what's very suspicious is that in the days leading up to the raid, the Joe had gone outside on two occasions and discovered Gardaí in unmarked cars outside his premises, which is at the end of a sort of a country cul-de-sac, you might describe. It's the end of a small road. There's only two houses on the road. It stretches for about maybe half a mile off the main road. They had no reason to be there unless they were doing some sort of surveillance or something. But anyway, having seized all this equipment, Joe went to court to try and get his stuff back. And it was in the course of that hearing, only a few weeks ago, 3-4 weeks ago, that the detectives concerned revealed that the main reason they were investigating Joe was because he was part of what they described as an insidious, seditious organisation that was seeking to take down the institutions of the state, most notably an Garda Síochána. So immediately I asked Joe, well, hey, Joe, what organisation could they possibly be talking about? You know, are you a member of the Ballina Knitting Club, for example? And he told me, no, I don't belong to any organisation except I'm a member of Integrity Ireland. And we then discovered that the guards had actually seized all this equipment with the apparent express intentions of trying to dig up some dirt on our volunteer organisation. Now, this ruling in the High Court is particularly troubling in context of the fact that they can now cruise through all of Joe's computers, laptops and everything, and whether they find the evidence, and again, I'm very reluctant here to make broad sweeping accusations here, but we have so many complaints on record alleging that the guards either framed people, forged signatures and documents, planted evidence, etc., etc., and a lot of them are very, very credible complaints. They've all been checked out by our staff, you know, to make sure that the people we're dealing with are bona fide. It's very worrying that what the Supreme Court has in effect done is handed a blank license to the guards to come into your house or my house or anybody's house on any sort of a made-up premise, and whatever they may discover in that household, or whatever may be discovered, you know, in inverted commas, in that household, can then be used to criminalise any given individual. And it's extremely troubling because I would argue that there can't be a person in the country who hasn't got something, you know, whether it be a tax return they didn't fill out or, you know, whatever. There's, you know, I mean, it's just extremely troubling that the Supreme Court has allowed this to happen, and apparently it was a rule that was in force for about 25 years that they've overturned.
That's right, yeah. It's quite astonishing, really. But like, it's still kind of like old news at this stage, because we're hearing it every day. You know, everybody knows their share of stories about corruption in the force and in local government and in the wider government on a bigger scale. Like, you know, so I suppose in a way we're not surprised or shocked anymore to hear this sort of stuff. We almost come to expect it in a strange sort of a way. We kind of half expect it now these days, because it's just so endemic. It seems to be part of our culture that government is corrupt. Criminals and thugs running the show. And
yes, but here's the problem, Jimmy. And here, I'm sorry if we're overlapping a little bit, Jimmy, there. No, I was going to say that this is really a big problem. You're right. It's the story of the frog in the water. If you turn the heat up slowly, the frog doesn't realize he's being cooked until it's too late. This is part of what we're trying to do with Integrity Ireland, is to make the public aware in a very real and immediate sense of how serious the problem of corruption in Irish institutions is, and to encourage people to be brave enough, number one, to speak about it, number two, to take action about it, number three, not to be intimidated by people who are in effect abusing all the authority that we have invested in them, you know. We have a little analogy, you know, of going to the local store and buying a loaf of bread, and you get home and you find it stale, and you go back down again the next day to buy another loaf of bread, and this time it's mouldy, and then the third day you go down and it's got maggots in it or something, and of course you then go back down to the owner of the shop and you say, look, you know, I keep paying you for the bread, and it's not fit for consumption, and you know, and if he's a decent shopkeeper and a decent person, he'll refund your money, of course, and make sure you get fresh bread in future. But if he's got an absolute monopoly, and he is, like many of our highly placed civil servants and government officials, in effect, a sociopath, somebody who doesn't care about other people, he'll tell you to go and jump in the lake. And you're stuck there, because if he's got a monopoly and he's the only vendor in town who's supplying bread, there's only two things you can really do. One is to embarrass him by exposing, telling everyone, this man is selling rotten bread, you're being taken for fools. And secondly, you set up your own bakery. And this, in a way, is how Integrity Ireland is starting to evolve at the moment. We're finding now that there are people coming straight to us, even before they bother going through the Garda authorities or bother going through GSOC, you know, the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission, simply because they have no faith anymore that any of these institutions are anything more than a smoke and mirrors operation designed to frustrate legitimate complainants and protect the elite, you know, the connected elite at the top of Irish society, you know.
Well, it's a damning incitement to think that people will go straight to Integrity Ireland, like. Especially on foot, like, as we've seen quite recently, like, the most the strangest story, I think, to come out of last year was the booking of the GSOC offices by Garda Síochána. You couldn't make that stuff up. You can't make it up. It's crazy, you know.
Well, it was an interesting story, but there were various different dimensions to it that not many people would know about unless they're on the inside and looking at this stuff. But I should clarify something about GSOC. Now, the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission was set up, I believe, between 2005 and 2008, ostensibly because of the corruption that had been unearthed in Donegal, with people being framed for murder, you know, bombs being left on their land, and then they were being arrested as terrorists and all this, to get corrupt Gardaí to make them get quicker promotions and such like. And amongst all the hullabaloo that came out of that, they decided, okay, we'll set up this Ombudsman Commission. And this will replace what was then the discredited Garda Complaints Board, where you had guards investigating guards. But what people should know, and I'll keep this really tight, Jimmy, just very simply, just a snapshot here. Mm-hmm. First of all, the CEO of the discredited Garda Complaints Board was a man called Anthony Duggan. Now, he was the boss of that operation, and he's a civil servant, not a guard, he's a civil servant, but he was the CEO of the discredited Garda Complaints Board. Even today, in 2015, he is still the chief administrator, the head of operations at the new GSOC, Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission. The three Garda, the three ombudsman commissioners are simply figureheads. We've just lost Mr. Simon O'Brien. He went recently. He was a policeman in the Met Police some time back, but then for a while he was working at the Garda Inspectorate. He was supposed to be a tame figure that they slipped in there to keep the boat from rocking. But what most people don't realise is that when you or I make a complaint against a member of the Garda Síochána, first of all, you have up to 90 staff at the Garda Ombudsman who will do everything in their power to try and make that complaint inadmissible. If it is admissible, which means they are not allowed then to investigate the guard, we're led to believe that there are civilian investigators going in there investigating the guards, but it's simply not true. We've tried several times to get the name of even one of their civilian investigators, and the only name they gave back to us was Simon O'Brien, who is the man who just retired.
Okay.
But he doesn't do investigations. What happens is they go straight to the Garda Commissioner. Now, this is GSOC. They've admitted that you've got a legitimate complaint. The first thing they do then, they tell the guard who's being complained about that he's got a complaint about against him. Then they go to the Garda Commissioner, and it's the Garda Commissioner who assigns the investigating officer who is another guard. And to all intents and purposes, the GSOC is just there to produce letterheads so that they communicate with you. You think you're dealing with an independent oversight body, but in fact, what you're really dealing with is a patsy who has been appointed by the Garda Commissioner to investigate your complaint about another guard. You know, in other words, nothing has changed other than we're now being hit for another 11 or 12 million a year to service GSOC. And, you know, again, the whole point of it and the whole premise is to run people out of time, to frustrate them, and to give people the false impression that their complaints are actually genuinely being looked at. And I'm sorry, Jimmy, to ramble on about this, but it's crucial to what's going on in Ireland. The Minister for Justice, Frances Fitzgerald, has had these 300 and something complaints sent into her, many of which are complaints against GSOC and the fact that they're not investigating serious complaints about guards. And she has, in effect, decided now that there's going to be no further action, you know. So it's just a circuit of dead ends that frustrate people. And people just give up the ghost. They get fed up and exhausted, you know, and understandably decide that they're not going to pursue it any further.
Yeah, indeed, because the whole legal process has a huge effect on people. It's a very negative experience to have to go through. And then when you've got like agencies like with unlimited funds, like putting roadblocks in your way and stopping you from getting to the truth of things, like I can well imagine that you just get so tired. Most people would just want to give up.
Well, there's one short example, just a small example, and I'll just talk about one of my own cases. I had been seriously harassed, death threats, online attacks, I mean, very serious abuse. If you imagine the worst sort of allegations you can make against a married man with children, and then imagine these being put up on the internet, and I mean, in, you know, big high-profile places like Facebook and LinkedIn and places like that and whatever. But there were some very, very serious attacks, including death threats against myself, my wife, and my children. So I went to, I had all the data, I gave it to the guards. We had the IP addresses, everything required to track who had been doing this, phone numbers, everything, the whole lot. Now, it was about 18 months before I realized that the guards were not doing the investigations, despite the fact they were telling me they were. They were putting a great deal more effort into not investigating who's doing this rather than doing it. They even wrote me a letter and said they'd arrested people, and we've since found out this was all complete and utter lies. This is a chief superintendent writing to me saying they've arrested, detained and questioned people. And then we find out they're lying to us, and you wonder, what is going on? So I went to the courts, and I got court orders to direct companies like Aircom, Meteor, Facebook, and so on, and various other companies, to release this data to me. But believe it or not, Arthur Cox solicitors, and I don't mind naming them here on the open media here, Arthur Cox solicitors, who are in effect they're another arm of government, even though nobody will admit that. They're supposed to be an independent firm of solicitors. But these are the firm of solicitors who are managing NAMA. They've got two opposing teams of solicitors, one on each side, defending, one prosecuting. And they're both from the same company, and they're both drawing their funds from the state. An average of €28,000 a day since September 2008. They're being paid out of our money to manage this NAMA thing. They're also knee-deep in this site-serve controversy as well. And they sent one of their barristers, who was another figure who had been implicated in very serious fraud against the state, but nothing happened to him. He was just given a slap on the wrist. Well, I say he didn't even get the slap on the wrist. He was just exposed in the newspapers for trying to swindle $170,000 out of the state. And the taxing master said he was appalled at the... he'd never seen the like of it in all of his years as taxing master. And he denied the man one of his claims for $75,000. He didn't even give him a single penny for it, you know. But this character came down all the way to Castlebar and County Mayo. He sent down from Dublin to stop me getting the orders, which would identify the people who had been attacking me and my family for a year and a half. And I was bewildered. I didn't know what on earth was going on. But apparently, this is the de facto function for all of the agencies of the state and the various affiliates that work with them, especially the law firms, the highly placed law firms, is to protect the interests of the powers that be at all costs. Justice, truth, human rights and all that is gone, long since gone out the window. That's what's going on here, and we have to somehow do something to try and reverse this.
If I might add, actually, you've gone to the point about corporate lawyers, basically, international lawyer companies and what have you.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about the fact you had death threats and all this sort of thing, Edward Snowden released documentation that basically shows that various private corporations as well as government corporations are hacking us and trying to find out what our information is, part of the reason why they wanted to grab a computer for the hard drive. Now, when I'm sort of looking at that situation, it sounds to me like you were targeted by, and it happens a lot with other activists as well, targeted by trolls who try to disrupt, break up and psychologically threaten you. So, and that, these would be probably paid for by private corporations who would also be the ones that would be doing sort of any sort of hacking and things. If you would, I actually got hacked and I gave the phone number from that I got from Vodafone. We gave that to the police, and within 5 days, they decided not to pursue the case and would only pursue it if I had money stolen, quote unquote. Now, at the end of the day, this was in the middle of the Daily Mail phone hacking thing. So the Vodafone really wanted to nick the person, but the police said no. Now, the police had already hacked me, and it was the Daily Mail phone hacking squad, they said. And
are you still there, Sean?
I think Sean has just done his disappearing, actually.
He's just been hacked.
Maybe he just got hacked. So,
well, I'll tell you, Jimmy. It's interesting.
Sean's back. Sean's back now, I think.
Ah,
sorry.
Right.
Give me the floor there, Sean. Go ahead. Yeah.
Sorry. Well, I was just going to sort of bring that to your attention, and I wondered if you had looked at sort of the security, you know, how the security system works, and you know, what sort of problems you might be having with emails and these sort of things. Have you noticed anything like that yourself?
I was just saying, as when you were gone there for a second, Sean, it was very timely that that you should mention this, because in the what I should explain again, without dragging the story out too far, is that at the beginning I was only dealing with my own personal issues. I had a problem with a person who turned out to be what you might say connected. He's related to a very senior politician in Ireland. Now, I didn't know it at the time, but I put down a lot of the negative attentions I was getting down to the, you know, and the fact that the police wouldn't investigate because he was connected, you see. But it's since I started doing the Integrity Ireland thing, and since I became somewhat of a nuisance to highly placed authority figures, you know, by, for example, challenging members of the judiciary about some of the decisions they're making, you know, writing to politicians or you know, cabinet ministers and asking them why nothing has been getting done about crimes and so on. And I did get interviewed by a couple of journalists on the phone, and on two notable occasions, and one was by the Times, was one of the papers, another one was the Sunday Business Post. On these occasions, they asked me midstream, why are you recording this? Or you didn't tell me you were recording this. And I said, well, I'm not. You know, I'm not recording it. They'll say someone is. Somebody is. I've written to Garda headquarters and asked them why. and how and why my our phone's being tapped and everything. And I don't want to come across as some sort of conspiracy nut here, because I know how bad that looks when you don't understand what's going on. As somebody from the outside looking in would think, oh my Lord, all these guys are off their rocker. They think that this, that, and the other is happening. But I know for a fact that we are definitely being listened into, and I can't go into the details here, but information has surfaced that could have only come from one particular source, etc., etc. So we're definitely being listened into. Definitely my phones are being listened into. We suspect also that to a certain extent our emails and things are maybe being intercepted. But what you might think is worth mentioning here is a few weeks ago, shortly after we found out that the Garda Special Detectives Unit are doing an investigation into Integrity Ireland, we got multiple lengthy hits, hours at a time, from three specific locations in the USA, of all places, and each one in turn happens to be the same location where the FBI, the CIA, and some cyber crimes unit with the American Army are all based. Now, of course, it could just be some Irish person who works for those companies who's being a patriot and is interested in our work. But it was quite an unusual coincidence, especially with the volume and the amount of time that was being spent. Hours upon hours upon hours, and many, many documents and files being downloaded. Obviously somebody was scrutinizing our website. And I'm not concerned in the sense that there's nothing we're doing that I need to be worried about in a legal sense. Everything we're doing is absolutely right. But the problem is, because the authorities are not adhering to the law and the Constitution, those of us who are doing so and pressing them and pushing them are a threat to them. But we're only a threat, as I keep saying to people, we're not a threat to anybody in a position of authority and power who is actually doing their job according to their own code of conduct and ethics and the law and the Constitution. But I realize those people who are invested in corrupt activities and have built a career out of it, they surely have a very strong motive to want to shut us down. And I believe that's what's going on. And they're using, elements of the security forces and the guards, of course, to try and bring that result about.
Interesting. You mentioned the that cyber crimes, because we were discussing some NATO operation in the Ukraine just shortly before you arrived, where they were publishing names of people who are considered enemies of the state and publishing all their information on a database, and quite scary stuff. Very, very scary.
I'd be quite disappointed if we're not up there somewhere, no?
You probably are indeed, along with the rest of us here at PIR.
Well, I could definitely say that if you want to wonder if you're paranoid or whatever, that you should just basically try the intercept.org, and that's where Glenn Greenwald is placing, and various others are placing stories from the captured hard drives that Edward Snowden brought out of America at great cost to himself. There's a lot of information on the internet that will show you that indeed you are not basically paranoid. The question is how they use that against the citizens. And by the look of it, from what you're saying, that they're using it in a more should we say covert way to you. So you can't quite put your finger on it. And in the terms of journalists, and they always do this, they use it in an overt way to warn the journalists. So the journalists were well aware that you weren't recording. They can record without an echo, but they can also record with an echo as well if they want people to know that they're being hacked. And there's various other tricks that they can do as well with phones. So the bottom line is that it's interesting when you said that it was made obvious, or should we say overt surveillance when the journalists were involved, because the journalists are very much forced away from these stories, mainly because they have that, and then also they get threatened with legal actions by these legal corporations you're on about, and there's various other ways of bringing the media into attention. And in the same way, I kind of think that's what's happening with the Gardaí as well. When we talk about private funding of Gardaí, which will come on at some point, then there'll be a conflict of interests. And we're seeing that in the UK at the moment, where police forces are being funded by IBM and various other big corporations. corporations. There's big conflicts of interests. So I just thought I'd mention that you're not paranoid and give you some links and other people out there links to check that fact. Ireland has very much been kept in the dark with what's happened with Snowden. Most people don't even know who he is. So basically, that's just a common fact around the rest of the world. Anyway, to you, Stephen. One thing I did want to say very quickly, that you did the video with T.D. Claire Daly and Mick Wallace on the 24th. And I just want to know, because I saw the video and it was really good to see them, because they also basically got fed up with the judicial system. They've accepted £1,000 fine, which they're not going to pay, and they're not going to challenge it because they don't think it will benefit, you know, their argument was being heard by the judge. So there was kind of similarities between you and them in terms of court, your perception of the courts in Ireland. But with that talk, I was just wondering, you've obviously met Claire Daly and Mick Wallace, could I ask just an off-topic question? How did you find them? Did you have an off-the-video talk with them? Any information you can give?
Yes, no. A little history here. The setup of Integrity Ireland, as the entity, you know, today, it's been growing for about 2.5 years. But around 2.5 years ago, Claire Daly, Mick Wallace, Luke Flanagan, Luke Ming Flanagan, and Joan Collins, now four independent TDs in Ireland, set up what have become known as the Red Cow meetings. Now, the Red Cow is a hotel in Dublin and a meeting venue. So they set up a meeting based on the reports that they were receiving from various people who were complaining about bad treatment by the authorities. And for one reason or another, they decided that they would focus on this issue, and they invited people to turn up at the Red Cow meeting. And there were a great number of people there, including people involved with the Ian Bailey case, for example, which everybody knows about. There were retired guards who had been targeted for speaking out. I think it's fair to say there were several hundred people turned up at these early meetings. And that's where we first met Claire and Mick. Now, Joan, to a certain extent, seems to have dropped into the background a little bit recently, Joan Collins. Luke Ming Flanagan, of course, and his sort of secretary, his personal secretary, a man I'll mention, Patrick Fitzpatrick, because he was very effective at trying to pull the threads of a very disparate group of people together to try and, you know, we went out and we did some protests and stuff. But I was invited early on to deal with the paperwork side of things, but I knew at the time that I wasn't capable of it. And sometime shortly afterwards, they came up with the title Justice for All. And under that banner, we submitted complaints to the Ministry of Justice and Alan Shatter way back, where, interestingly, we were locked out of the Ministry of Justice. There was a small group of us, only, I think, 40 of us, and 17 of us were handing in complaints. And this was the beginning of the 300-odd complaints that are now sitting, gathering dust, under the so-called Independent Review Panel mechanism, which is yet another, in my opinion, it's another attempted whitewash, a fig leaf, as Claire was saying the other day. So the short answer to your question there, Sean, is that I would have a very deep and abiding respect for the position and the stance that Claire Daly and Mick Wallace have taken on this issue of injustice being done to ordinary citizens, so to speak, and the inadequacies, especially in the justice system. I think they are brave and courageous. I don't fully understand or know about their political positions, but I try to focus in on the issues. When there is issues of injustices, and it's not worry about who's involved or whatever, but is this an instance where authorities have done wrong when they shouldn't have done? If so, Integrity Ireland is trying to target that and do something about it. But I wanted to add here, so having said that, they are, Claire and Mick, yes, I think they're on the right track. I think they're getting to be recognised now as being spokesperson for people who don't have a voice. But there was one thing that I think is really important to mention before, you know, we get too deep into the programme here. It's the tactics that we are employing, because we're doing something different that hasn't been done before. You see, one could argue, look, if I'm such a nuisance and a problem for the authorities, you could ask, well, why haven't they simply come and arrested me? Why haven't I been hauled away for contempt of court? Why haven't I been hauled up for defamation or something of that nature? And the answer to that is that we already have so much dirt, if you like, on some of the major authority figures that I believe we have backed them into a corner. They don't quite know what to do with us because we've alerted them to the fact that we're keeping a database of our own information on them, just the same way as all of us are subject to this pulse system. And in fact, we've got many instances, including in my own case, of Gardaí inventing crimes or allegations and putting them on records. I was in court one day, I wasn't even told about it. Apparently accused of threatening and abusive behaviour. Apparently the case was thrown out. I didn't even know about it until a year later when I went off and sought to get my Garda records, and there it was, that I'd apparently been, I'd been up in a courthouse in the west of Mayo and had been charged. And I've written to Garda headquarters to explain this. Silence. You know?
Do you think that's because they needed to find something on you to get you onto their system so they could spy on you or whatever they wanted to do?
A friendly guard, and again, I'd also like to preface everything we're saying here the fact that you can have an institution that is completely off-centre and is doing shocking, appalling things, and of course it is the people in that institution that are doing it. But there are also a great many decent Gardaí. I know several myself. I have personal acquaintances and friends. Also, we have whistleblowers. We have a number of them that are communicating with us, who are decent people doing their best to stand up to what's going on. But overall, yes, a friendly guard told me that one of the tactics deployed against so-called troublesome people is to criminalize them by hook or by crook. And they will start lodging allegations made against you, and they get put on a record. And then, of course, when you're eventually hauled up for something in the courts, they say, "Oh, Judge, you know, Your Honour, this person is well known to the Gardaí, or he's got 27, 28 allegations on his record." And that, in cases, happened to me. I went from having nothing, absolutely nothing at all, on my police record, and then when I checked it after about 2.5 years. Of trying to take on this connected person, there were 27 entries on this thing. Various, some of them were just alleged suspects, some were the crime, or I can't remember all the various things. But it was on the pulse system anyway, which we're now found is completely open to abuse. This is the same system, you know, where they wipe all the penalty points. And actually, there was an article in the Sunday Independent today on, I think it's on page 5 or so, and it's entitled "Gardaí Not Policing, Unless You're a Driver or Drug User." And in here, there's some just shocking statistics, but they're saying that they keep on reclassifying serious crime, downgrading it, because it's too much hard work to bother investigating it. But that they are basically being used, the guards are being used as a collection agency. And I can't remember how much they said, but they've raised, I think it was 30 million last year, and a third of all the drivers in Ireland, a whole third, of all the drivers in Ireland last year, got some sort of penalty, and are raising all this funds now for the state. So they said this is the only area that they seem to be worried about. There have been some 200 gang-related murders in the last decade that remain unsolved, and so on and so forth. And they use the term shambolic. You know, shambolic practices have been allowed to pass for policing, etc., etc. We are in a crisis, as far as I'm concerned, because you've got to imagine what it's like. You're sitting in a rural place in the middle of Mayo or wherever, and you know, burglars come to the house, or some miscreants turn up, and if you can't call the police and know that they're going to come out and protect you, where does that leave us? And that, unfortunately, is the sense of betrayal that many, many ordinary people feel when talking about our policing and our justice system.
Indeed. Well, it's quite astonishing, really. That article coming out today, which vindicates what's been said here on PIR for countless years now, that the police are basically tax collectors for the crown. You know,
yes.
There's a lot to you. That's good find. I'll have to get a link to that article.
Well, there's one thing that might interest you. Now, I know this hit the news recently, and Claire Daly brought it up in the Dáil, that a guard was present when a member of the public was shot dead. And his superiors advised him afterwards, you were not there. You know, in other words, that's obviously a crime against the administration of justice. He was told to lie about the circumstances under which the shooting had occurred, obviously to protect the person who had committed the shooting, which arguably was a murder. Now, this apparently was brought directly to Taoiseach Enda Kenny. And Taoiseach Enda Kenny, doing what he does best, passed the parcel on to the Justice Minister. And now, if this is not a series of offences after the fact, you know, I mean, there is legislation there that states if you're aware that a serious crime has been committed, you are duty bound to report it. If you do not report it, you are guilty of a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And this is to come back, you know, to come back full circle to some of the tactics that we are using. What we've done is we've gone in and we've looked relatively carefully at some of the rules and regulations, most notably the various acts, the various statutes and acts under which the guards often prosecute ordinary people, such as the Non-Fatal Offences Against the Person Act, which is one of them. There's another one, an offence against the administration of justice, which includes things like fraud and perjury, which happens on a daily basis in our courts, but you know, nobody does anything about it. So what we've started doing is using these rules and these regulations back against the authority figures who are the worst offenders. In other words, instead of, you know, as you saw probably in one of the videos we did recently, we verbally arrested a handful of Gardaí and asked them to accompany us back to their own police station for processing. Now, it's a bit mind-boggling when you start thinking about it, but in fact, it's the only avenue legally open to us is to instigate citizens' arrests in face of the reluctance, the apathy, the refusal of an Garda Síochána to do their jobs properly. So we're now reporting, and I mean all the way from local Gardaí, solicitors, barristers, even judges. We are reporting judges to Garda headquarters for offences against the administration of justice. Because judges, even though they don't think they are subject to the law and to the Constitution. We've got that in writing several times when we've tried to complain about judges. The response comes back, oh dear, you know, we can't do anything because judges are independent in their statutory functions, but subject only to the law and the Constitution. It's right in the Constitution itself. So we go back and we say, okay, well, they are subject to the law then, and they are Irish citizens, are they not? Okay, so the fact that they did X, Y, and Z, or they held a hearing without the plaintiff being present, or they went ahead and, did something clearly and overtly unjust, unfair, or against the law, the Constitution, or human rights, whatever. In that case, we lodge a criminal complaint against them. First of all, we lodge it with the guards. Then we alert that judge, and we send them one of our own Integrity Ireland forms that says, you have now been reported to an Garda Síochána for committing a criminal offence. Now, we run a risk, of course, if we lodge a false complaint, we can in turn be prosecuted for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So we obviously have to be right and sure about our facts. But we're sure about our facts. Why? Because we make sure that nobody goes into court on their own anymore. We make sure that people take contemporaneous notes while they're in there. And then if, as often happens, the order issued by the court has no reflection of what actually happened in the court that day, we can counteract it and say, well, we've got 7, 8, 10, 15 witnesses that were sitting there and we all took notes and this is what we heard. And, you know, we're not going to stand up. You have now committed a crime as against the administration of justice by committing some sort of a fraud or an attempt to pervert justice. And it's what all we want, you see. Here's the irony here, Jimmy and Sean. All we want is for the people in authority to simply do the jobs right, the jobs that we're paying them so highly for. That's all they have to do. And the minute they do it, and all our guys are instructed, listen, don't be disrespectful to authority figures until you see that they're taking the mick, you know, until you see that they're out to ruin your life and to do so illegally. At that point, then we get firm and we take them on straight on. But what's happening now is that judges, we're walking into courts and we have our Integrity Ireland badges on and the like, and it appears from the reports we're getting back that judges are starting to sit up and pay attention. And it's crossing their mind, well, maybe it's not the best idea in the world to do something illegal or inappropriate or against court rules with this particular group of people anymore. And that's why we want more and more people to join us, bring us their stories, because the fact is, together we are actually beginning to make a difference. But it's predicated on that key issue that we are turning the tables, so to speak, on corrupt authority figures, not by following their directions, which is go to the Garda Ombudsman, or take it to the courts, or go to the Law Society, or go to the, you know, the employment tribunals, whatever it might be, all the various so-called regulators and authorities and tribunals and statutory oversight bodies. It's our opinion that they aren't fit for purpose. So instead, you come to Integrity Ireland, and what do? We arm you with some tactics. We arm you with the information you need. And we take from you the information you have about the authority figures who have wronged you, and we put that on our database, which is available to members. And in that way, we find then, for example, it's particularly going into court. Let's say you have trouble with a guard. I don't know, let's say he abused you, he arrested you for something, and then he beat you up in the cells or something, whatever. And then you're charged with assaulting him. Now, this is what's just happened with the Rossport people, who are going in to try and get damages for the physical injuries they received when they were beaten up on the protests, the Shell to Sea protests up in North Mayo.
Yeah, yeah.
When they lodged those complaints, the first reaction of the guards, even though not a single guard had reported to the medical centre with any injuries, the reaction of the guards who had beaten them up, and of course that seven-minute segment of film has suddenly gone missing, but the reaction of the guards who had actually beaten these guys up was then to charge the men with having assaulted the guards. And this is another typical tactic. Now, in my opinion, instead of that going into the court and the judge saying, oh, naughty, naughty, you shouldn't have done that, those guards should be thrown in jail. They should be absolutely thrown in jail. And the message go out to other guards, you cannot do this. You're supposed to be the bastions of law and order. You're supposed to be moral pillars of society, you know? But instead, we're finding that more and more people are describing in Garda Síochána in general terms, and particularly to do with senior management, as a criminal organisation, you know? And it's a shocking indictment of the state of Irish society today that I, for one, who would be considered a law-abiding, decent citizen and everything, you know, and worked all my life and all the rest of it. But, I am loath now to call the guards for anything. I don't want to draw attention to myself in any way, shape or form. I certainly wouldn't trust them to deal with any issue now, especially with the work I'm doing with Integrity Ireland, unless it was someone I personally knew. But anyway, I've sort of rambled on a wee bit there. Sorry, Jimmy. But
that's okay. That's fine.
One little question to follow on. Sorry, Jimmy.
Yeah, no, go on, Sean.
It was UNHCR and other human rights organisations in Ireland. Have you tried all the European human rights people? Have you tried linking with those? Because sometimes it certainly seems that Europe can be an alternative to sort of Irish court systems that don't want to deal with problems. Recently, for instance, Facebook was taken to court in Ireland, and then the courts in Ireland refused it and then fobbed it off to the European Union courts, where it is at the moment. Have you looked into the UNHCR based in Ireland or any of the other local human rights organisations in Ireland and tried to pull resources, do you think? Have you tried?
Yes, well, it's a good suggestion, Sean. To be absolutely frank, I am so overwhelmed with doing things that we're still evolving at the moment. I mean, Integrity Ireland is by far from a finished project. And in fact, we've just now started to migrate a little bit in the sense that we're just beginning to have regular local meetings, and we're trying to sort of franchise this out to trusted members around the country and asking them to take a bit more responsibility for people who want to join in various areas, because at the moment I'm doing most of the administration myself. You talk about going to Europe and everything. I'll just use one example, the example of Louise O'Keefe, the lady who fought for 17 years through the Irish court system to have the offences committed against her when she was a child, you know, the abuse that she suffered in primary school, recognised. And apparently there were, I think it was 24 different judges in a row in Ireland, all the way right up to the Supreme Court, ruled against her. The first step she made was into Europe, and immediately they ruled in favour of her. But it took her 17 years. Do you understand? So while we will, of course, explore any avenues open to us where there appears to be some possibility of getting a resolution or some, but in the short term, it seems to us that the sort of people that we're dealing with in Ireland have got all of the resources of the state at their beck and call. The way the system, as we all know, the way the system normally works now is you have a complaint. Let's say you have a complaint about a neighbour or whatever, and you're trying to deal with it and things get out of hand, you go to the guards. Now, if something goes wrong in that sequence, you try and go to the guards' superiors to complain about them. And you invariably find yourself being intimidated, harassed, and so on. And then you go to that superior's superior, and the next superior, and the next. And of course, you've got layer after layer after layer of superiors. And at each level, they all seem to be very well trained and practiced in giving you the proverbial runaround. So we're saying to people, no, stop doing it. Look, if you do lodge a complaint at your local guard station about something, by all means, go ahead and do it. Don't go in and let them take it down. You write it out before you go in there. There's a format that we follow, you know. You write it before you go in there. You take at least one witness in with you. You get them to sign it. You get a copy of that when you walk out of there, and you immediately send it to Garda headquarters, care of Noreen O'Sullivan, or whoever the current commissioner might be, right? Why? Because they will then have to send it back down the tracks. And it's a very different story when Garda headquarters sends a complaint down to the local guards versus you doing it. And yes, you're going to irritate a lot of people. And yes, they're going to, a lot of people decide that they're going to get you or whatever. But you know what? It's getting increasingly difficult for them to do that because of the information we have and the database. We call it the HAFTA database. It's holding authority figures to account. But it's in a, let's call it a confidential area. You cannot see it unless you are a member. But by looking at the HAFTA database, you might discover that Garda Murphy, for example, or Solicitor Fitzgerald or whoever, or civil servant so-and-so who has wronged you is on that list. And there are two or three other members of Integrity Ireland that have had similar problems with that person. And what we do then is we try and put these people in touch with each other so that they can support each other and witness, if necessary, in court cases, who can put their experiences down on the affidavit of the current complainant, you know, so that when they go into court, you're not just saying, this person wronged me, Judge. It's this person wronged me and these three or four other members of Integrity Ireland who are all willing to stand up and swear under oath that this is a persistent problem and this person needs to be dealt with. And they're facing now, you see, the corrupt authorities that we're trying to deal with are realizing that they're facing a determined group of people who they can't just come after. They can't isolate us and come after us. They tried to do that with Joe Ducey, and already it's backfired massively on them. They're now trying to keep Joe's computers and phones and everything all the way until October on the instructions of the DPP. Again, this is another tactic that is often used. We get this reported to us by many members of Integrity Ireland who've crossed the guards at the wrong time, and they find there's a raid on the house, no warrant is shown, and items are seized that basically put that person out of business. You know, it's usually their computers, the tools of the trade. In some cases, it's farm equipment that's seized and taken away. In some cases, it's photography equipment. In other cases, it's things like passports and the like. And there might be some sort of excuse given for why they're doing it. But invariably, the inconvenience, at the very least, caused to that individual has the effect of shutting them down. It's an indirect form of harassment designed to disempower people who are willing to stand up. And the same has been deployed against me, of course, as well. And you know, it takes many forms. But, you know, you think your life is supposed to be going one particular way, and you find yourself spending all your time filling out affidavits, going to court, and, you know, writing letters to authority figures, being ignored, being given the runaround. And a lot of people,
I'm sorry, Stephen, but we're rapidly running out of time here, and I wish we could have spoken with you longer. We're down to the last 20 seconds now, so we have to let the stream go for OIM, who are coming up next. But I'd like to thank you very, very much on behalf of myself and Sean for joining us this evening, Stephen, and I hope you will come back and join us another time. So,
I'd love to. Thanks, Jimmy, and thanks, Sean. I'm sorry I took too much time there, perhaps, but I do appreciate the chance to speak on the radio. Thanks.
No problem at all.